Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauly on King MOX.
Hour number two of the program, a jam-packed hour number two. Fabian Ardaya, who covers the Dodgers for The Athletic, he's going to join us in about 15 minutes. Later on this hour, Russell Baxter, who is a longtime journalist covering the National Football League, he will join us as well. As always, if you want to chime in on anything that we're talking about, you can do so by calling or texting 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900, or tweet at me, at Matt Pauly on air. I want to address this just kind of once. I generally don't actually even acknowledge this, but I'm getting it more and more and more. I get on the text line. I don't know if it's the same people or the same person or just a small group of people, but I see it all the time where I get text messages saying that the Cardinals are going to move west and that they're going to move to Las Vegas. One text I got today said they're going to move to Vegas or Tucson and make St. Louis a AAA affiliate. Generally, like when there are absurd things that come my way, more often than not, I just kind of ignore them because they're absurd and they're not worth talking about. But as I see this on an every single day basis, seemingly as I'm hosting shows here, that is absurd. No, that's not what they're doing. I've seen people on conspiracy theories that say that the Cardinals have had something to do with the increase in crime in downtown as a way to try to position themselves out of downtown. Like, no. The St. Louis is a market that supports the Cardinals. Even in a year where attendance is down, they're still getting a lot more people into Busch Stadium than a lot of Major League Baseball teams. They've got a complex across the street in Ballpark Village that makes them gobs and gobs and gobs of money. Their TV money, while it's still, you know, mid-market size TV money, their TV money way, way, way outpunches the weight of other markets that are about the same size. Like, I've been to Tucson. Tucson sucks. They're not, what? If you're out there texting me that every single day because you think it's true, it's not. No, they're here. They're not moving anywhere. And I started seeing this stuff last year, and it's just continued on. So I'll say that, and hopefully we can just kind of put that to bed here for a little while before we do move on. Some breaking news, by the way, involving the NL Central. Milwaukee Brewers outfielder Christian Yelich needs back surgery. He is done for the year. We thought that was likely going to be the case when he went down with the injury. In fact, it was at one point reported that he was done for the year. The Brewers, and he refuted that, saying that he was going to do everything he could to return this year. He put out a social media message saying that he is indeed done for the year. Got a little bit of, I don't know if it's news, but just some analysis today from an ESPN story by Jesse Rogers, who we're fans of Jesse Rogers here. He's been on this program a good number of times. According to Jesse, Major League Baseball is legitimately considering going to a requirement that starting pitchers go at least six innings. And they would enforce this with the idea to accomplish two things. Thing number one is it would make pitchers less dominant, because if you have to go at least six innings, you're a pretty good chance you're going to go face an order a third time through. So that's going to give hitters a better chance. Also, if you have to go six innings, you are likely not going to be going max velo on as high of a percentage of pitches. You know, right now you got guys who go strike everybody out. Well, strikeouts A, take lots of pitches, and strikeouts B, put a lot of strain on the arm when you're throwing in the upper 90s into 100 miles per hour. So the idea is if you're forced to be going six innings, as a pitcher, you're going to adjust to that by maybe not going max velo on as many pitches, and then that's going to give hitters more of an opportunity. You know, we talked about this in our first segment today when we were talking about extra base hits and the ability to score in baseball, and how baseball in many ways was more aesthetically pleasing in the 80s when you could play small ball, and when you could slap hits together and score runs that way, I think Major League Baseball in some ways wants to go back to some version of that, and requiring pitchers to go at least six innings would possibly create that. The other thing that Major League Baseball claims, they believe that this would reduce pitching injuries. And you're probably going, what? Why would that reduce injuries? When you're making pitchers go deeper into games, wouldn't that increase the likelihood of injury? And what Major League Baseball would contend is that many of the injuries being suffered by pitchers are connected to max velocity situations. So going back to what I said a moment ago, if you're forcing guys to go six innings, you're forcing them not to throw max velocity quite as often, and they're going to be healthier because of it. Also would create a scenario where pitchers have to kind of refine their repertoire a little bit more, that you got to have more pitches that you can use effectively so you can get through that order a third time through. I, at the surface level, do not like this. I've been a fan of the rules that Major League Baseball has implemented. I like the pitch clock. I'm fine with the bigger bases. I don't think that really impacts anything. I'm fine with the throwing over rules. I'm fine with the defensive alignment rules. There's something about this one that I don't like. And also, to be fair on all of this, according to Jesse Rogers, there would be some ways for this not for a pitcher not to go six innings. If he gets to 100 pitches, that means you can get him out of the game. If he gives up four or more earned runs, you're allowed to remove him for being ineffective. If they get injured, obviously they're going to come out at that point, but it would also, there'd be a required injured list stint to go along with a player coming out of a game injured to avoid manipulation of the rules. I would also put probably a limit on how many pitches thrown in an inning. If you go throw 35 pitches in a single inning, well, then at that point you are allowed to be taken out of the game at that moment. Now, if you're throwing 35 pitches, there's a pretty good chance that you've given up a whole bunch of runs at that point. But say that would be another thing I'd put in there. I don't know. I like why they are considering putting this rule in place. I do. But what I don't, it just seems like a rule that doesn't need to go in. I am trying to argue against it, and I've been thinking about this all day long. I just don't like it, but what's frustrating about it is I like the reasons that they're considering it. And there's also been the other rule that's been floated around a little bit over the last couple of years that they've tested in independent league baseball, where the designated hitter is connected to the starting pitcher. So you are incentivized to keep the starting pitcher in as long as possible because you only have your DH as long as your starter is in. And then once your starter comes out of the game, you lose your DH and you revert to National League rules. I like that too. Like, I don't think that's ever going to happen. I would be generally, it seems gimmicky to me, which is why I would be against that. But at the same time, I like the end result of it. I like pitchers going deeper into games, and I like National League rules, and I like National League rules at the end of games. So I feel like Major League Baseball is on the right path here on what they're trying to get to. And I'm kind of breaking my own rule here. Because I always say to you as callers and texters and tweeters, if you're going to call in and complain about something, I want you to have a solution. I don't have much of a solution. I like what they're going for. I like the idea of it, but I'm against it. And I don't know what they can do. There's been talk about lowering the number of pitchers you can have on the roster, as opposed to carrying a 13-man staff, carrying an 11-man staff, and then that would require starting pitchers to go deeper into games just because you have less relief pitchers available. I'd be more willing to go in that direction. It's kind of funny to wonder what it would look like because the Cardinals carry 13 pitchers, and how often are they in a really bad spot from a relief pitching standpoint, or they need to go to a bullpen game and do things like that. One thing that this rule would eliminate is bullpen games. You would no longer have an opener. that would be something that just would not exist anymore in baseball, and I would be okay with that. We're still years away, potentially, from this happening, but it could be something that happens initially at some point in the future. So we look at that as we build the future, sponsored by Graybar, your distributor for electrical and data communication needs. I don't know if it's going to happen in the future. It might, but I would encourage you to head to ESPN.com and read what Jesse Rogers wrote about this. Because, again, at surface level, you go, no, that's a horrible rule. But then when you see all the motivations for Major League Baseball on why they want to maybe do that, it makes a lot more sense, because I think what Major League Baseball wants is what a lot of us want. All right, we will shift gears and we'll talk with Fabian Ardaya. He will join us in just a moment or so as we'll preview what's coming up with the Cardinals and Dodgers over the next few days. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. Cardinals off tonight, back at tomorrow. What's on Deck is sponsored by Chesterfield Fence and Deck, the sign you have the very best. What's on Deck is a three-game series against the Dodgers. To preview that, we're very happy to welcome back onto the program. Does a fantastic job covering the Dodgers for The Athletic. He is Fabian Ardaya. Fabian, appreciate you taking some time with us today. Before we get into this series, let's start with Tommy Edman, now part of the Dodgers organization. I'm sure Cardinals fans are curious how he's doing and when we might actually see him in the big leagues with the Dodgers.
Yeah, he's doing pretty well. Everything's tracking well. He's actually playing in the field now, which I know he hadn't quite done yet when he got traded to the Dodgers. He's expected to be activated sometime during the next homestand, so he just misses going back to St. Louis. But looks like the way the Dodgers plan on using him going forward is he's probably going to play a lot of center field, maybe some shortstop on occasion. But, yeah, Dodgers kind of viewed him as someone who can help fill a lot of different holes for them, which I'm sure Cardinals fans are really familiar with.
The Dodgers have been really good this year, 20 games over 500. That was the expectation for them. But they also find themselves in a bit of a fight for the division. The lead over the Diamondbacks and the Padres, who have been surging, is just two games at this point. Are Dodgers fans happy with what they've seen this year from the team, or were they expecting even more?
I think if you look at the fact that obviously they won 100 games last year and had the offseason that they did, and they're on pace, obviously, to win fewer games. Like, obviously, they're still a first-place team. Earlier this week, they were tied for the best record in baseball. But, yeah, I mean, this is definitely not how people expected this to go. I think the fact that this is a tight division race, despite the fact that it really wasn't for a lot of this season, some of it for within the Dodgers' control with how they've played the last few months, some of it not. Just, like, I don't think anyone really expected this. Padres and Diamondbacks each to go on a tear like this at the same time. But yeah, I mean, there are pretty clear holes with the roster that were obvious earlier on in the season that have, some have gone away, some have kind of festered. So it's kind of an imperfect team, but obviously there's still a lot of talent on the team. That's why they're 20 games above 500 still.
I think some people from the outside would look and say, what do you mean there's holes on the roster? And you're right when you say that. It is kind of funny, though, where the Dodgers can go out and acquire big-time players and make big moves, but sometimes it's that 23rd guy on the roster that you need to fill a certain thing to do, and maybe they don't have that. Is that kind of a correct way to assess that team?
Yeah, I think they've done a really good job in years past of getting that like sort of 23rd guy, like you mentioned. I think they just had such a wave of injuries this year, especially. I know, obviously, in years past, they've had injuries sort of come up at the wrong times, stuff like that. But like this year, they've lost more days to the injured list than any team in baseball, more projected value in terms of like Fangraphs WAR than any team in baseball. And they've really felt it. Like, some of it's stuff that they kind of expected, they kind of built it in. Other times, like, it's been a wave of pitching injuries, and even guys who were reinforcements, who are good stories, guys like River Ryan, they come up and then four games into their big league career, they need Tommy John surgery. So some of it's injuries, some of it's just the bottom half of the order having a lot of faith in guys who just hadn't performed or haven't performed in different aspects, and some of it's also just injuries, circumstances, who's available and who's not.
When, as Mookie Betts returns, what's is he going to be in the outfield? Is he the right fielder moving forward?
Yeah, it's going to be pretty much exclusively in right field. Obviously, I think last night he popped into second base late in the game. That's still available, but he's going to be in right field going forward. That's the alignment that the Dodgers are kind of going to go with, and he's going to hit second in the batting order as well. I know, obviously, They spoke super highly of what Mookie Betts was able to do at shortstop. I think if you look at it, they were in a position where I think come October, no matter what, they probably weren't going to roll him out at that position, just considering the fact they hadn't played it full time since he was a teenager. So they just got ahead of it now and sort of put him out back out in right field now.
He missed the 2 months, fractured hand, comes back, hits the home run. Like, where is he at from a physical standpoint? Is he close to 100%?
Yeah, he said the hand has felt good for a while. It's just a matter of, like, obviously you still have to let the bones heal even though your hand's not feeling any discomfort. But, yeah, I mean, the fact that he's sort of come back and looked like Mookie Betts, like, I think that's the big thing. Like, he had the day off today just to get his legs under him, but I don't expect him to give him many days off the rest of the way. So, like, he's come back and looked like Mookie Betts, which is a big thing for the Dodgers. I think the big thing going forward is, like, what does Tommy Edman look like, considering he hasn't played at all this year? Max Muncy hasn't played since May. What is he going to look like? I think those are maybe the bigger questions going forward in terms of these guys coming back.
Last thing for you, obviously Shohei Ohtani is there, and he brings so many things with him. For you this year, covering this team with him on it for the first time, what is it like covering a team that you've got a larger-than-life person like Shohei Ohtani?
Yeah, I think I had a little bit of experience with it, just considering I covered him a little bit when he was in Anaheim. But this is obviously different. The stakes are so much different here. I think a lot of times the stakes for the Angels were like, all right, where's the hope going to come from? Obviously, Ohtani was usually the source of it. Now, like, Ohtani comes not just with hope, but with expectations. Like, this is a team that has been so close for so long. Obviously won the World Series in 20, but so close to building on that. And he's the guy who was billed as helping put them over the top. Like, and so there's a lot of stakes that sort of come with it. Obviously, Ohtani's having a great season, on pace for 40-40 and chance of possibly winning MVP, even though he's just DHing this year. He's been excellent, but, like, everything, obviously, especially this time of year, you sort of have everything with an eye towards October. What is this guy going to look like in the postseason for the first time?
Fabian Ardaya, he covers the Dodgers for The Athletic. Thank you so much for taking some time with us today.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me.
Up next, Russell Baxter will join us. We'll talk NFL football with him. This is the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. It's Graybar Sports Open Line here on KMOX. No Cardinals baseball tonight, so we've got the full show. They'll be back at tomorrow, and before we know it, it's going to be the NFL regular season, some preseason football going on tonight. And to preview the season and talk about everything that's going on right now, one of my favorite people to be able to talk football with, he is Russell Baxter. You follow him on Twitter at Bax, B-A-X, football guru. He does work all over the place, and we're so happy that he can join us for a few moments. Russell, appreciate you taking some time. How are you?
I'm doing good. Just watching the Atlanta Falcons get busy within the last 24 hours. And, this is a team that a lot of people have high hopes on. With the signing of Kirk Cousins, they obviously drafted Michael Penix Jr., a little insurance policy just in case. Remember Kirk Cousins coming off the Achilles injury. But the bigger news is what they've done on defense in the last 24 hours, basically, trading for Matthew Judon. The Falcons have had a pass rush seemingly forever. And today the news that they added Justin Simmons, the safety.
Yeah, so Simmons gets the 1-year, $8 million deal. You mentioned Judon yesterday being acquired in a trade with the Patriots. It certainly does feel like the Falcons have improved themselves significantly, and that's not always easy to do once you get into training camp and you're just a few weeks out from the start of the regular season.
Yeah, no doubt. And what you're seeing, Matthew, over these last couple of days is some veterans landing jobs that may not have played last year, may not have played even 2 years ago. But as training camp goes on and the preseason goes on and people start to go down, they're bringing in fresher bodies. I mean, very quietly yesterday, the Buffalo Bills had Jordan Phillips last year, the defensive tackle. He signed with the Giants this offseason. And then yesterday, the Giants traded him to the Dallas Cowboys, who actually added Carl Lawson today, the pass rusher. So Dallas, who has been kind of strapped with these contract negotiations with CeeDee Lamb and Dak Prescott, finally kind of waking up as far as adding some veteran talent.
Yeah, I think that I think the Dallas situation may be the most compelling, interesting kind of off-season situation that is extended into training camp, with one guy sitting out of camp in CeeDee Lamb, another guy in Micah Parsons who's in camp but wants to get a new deal, a quarterback in Dak Prescott who is taking up so much money if he doesn't get a new deal for this season, and they're starting to run out of time. How much can they actually do to get those situations figured out in short order?
Well, you know, I find it hard to believe that those guys aren't going to play this year. And nobody, you know, it's very rare that someone extends a holdout anymore into the regular season. So I think these deals will get done and they might wind up being Band-Aid deals. You know, it's very interesting what's happened over the last year or so. You know, remember a couple of years ago, because of COVID, the salary cap went down. This past year, the salary cap went way up, I think over $30 million jump in one season. Then there was speculation, Matthew, this offseason a couple of months ago, that the NFL could maybe reduce the salary cap again and take a hit because of this Sunday NFL ticket verdict. Well, that just got reversed 2 weeks ago. So maybe it's game on again, and maybe the cap goes way up. I know we have seen some extraordinary contracts for quarterbacks and wide receivers over the last couple of months and so on. And, you know, Jordan Love got his money. Tua Tagovailoa got his money. Dak Prescott always seems to get his money because Jerry Jones loves to spend money, and he's been accused of overspending in some regards. Remember, he had to, you know, part ways with Ezekiel Elliott, you know, who was, you know, kind of gave way to Tony Pollard, but was still a good guy inside the red zone. My goodness, guess who's back with the Cowboys? Ezekiel Elliott. So I think these deals will get done. You know, sometimes just timing. You know, but if you're CeeDee Lamb and you led the league in catches last year and you're all pro and you're watching some of these other guys like Justin Jefferson, not saying he doesn't deserve it, get enormous money, you want your share of the pie.
Do you think the Cowboys really believe in Dak Prescott, or do you think that there's at least a small voice somewhere in that organization that's saying maybe they can do a little bit better at quarterback?
I got a chance to meet Jerry Jones quite a few years ago, and so obviously he's in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I'll say this politely. There is no small voice in the Dallas Cowboys, okay? There's not a whimper. There's not a whisper. Everything Jerry does, we all get to see. I mean, how many times do you see after a game an owner address the press and not necessarily the head coach, or maybe both? So Jerry Jones is very front and center. Listen, I don't know if Dak has done anything to really change their minds about what they have. Okay, here's a little reality check when it comes to the organization. Matthew, they're 4-13 in their last 17 playoff games, going back to 96, the 96 divisional round. Okay, now, you know, I'm pretty good with birthdays. I don't think Dak Prescott was playing for the Cowboys back then. They haven't been to the Super Bowl since 1995. They haven't even been to the damn NFC Championship game
right
since 1995. Now, and listen, let's be honest. What's the common link with the Dallas Cowboys going back to 1995? They've gone through quarterbacks. They've gone through coaches. They've gone through coordinators. It's the owner slash general manager slash, you know, valet slash post office director. Jerry Jones is the common denominator, and the way he runs that team, obviously his son is involved as well now. So you got to take a closer look at that. Listen, just repeating in the NFC East would be a triumph for the Cowboys, and I say it for this reason. I don't know if you know this, but no one's repeated in the NFC East in basically 20 years. The last time there were back-to-back wins by a team in the NFC East, the Eagles did it four straight years from 2001 to 2004.
And right now, the Eagles would be considered the favorite in that division, with the Cowboys having the second best odds. I mean, that's a two division. There's nobody's expecting anything out of Washington or probably even the Giants this year.
Well, listen, we always see every year some fourth place team come out and rock our world. Last year, two fourth place teams made the playoffs. Cleveland rebounded, and Houston went. Think about this. Houston won 11 games in a three-year span, Matthew. Last year, including the playoffs, they won 11 games all by themselves. So never say never. Listen, we saw Washington win a division title back in 2020 with a 7-9 record. So, again, this is a very, very odd division. And, again, a couple of years ago, four last-place teams made the playoffs the following year. You know, we've seen last-place teams. The year that Philadelphia beat New England in the Super Bowl, shameless segue that Patriots and Eagles are playing each other tonight, they were a last-place team in 2016 and then won the Super Bowl in 2017. So you can reverse trends very, very quickly. I think Dak just kind of gets a bad rap with the whole playoff thing. I'm not saying he's an all-timer or anything like that, but he's been pretty effective. But I'll tell you one thing. I saw Jordan Love carve up that Dallas defense last year with those young wide receivers. And Green Bay got hot at the right time. By the way, here's one for you. The Green Bay Packers have never lost a game in that stadium, in Jerry Jones Stadium. In fact, they won a Super Bowl in that stadium when they beat the Steelers in 2010. They are undefeated in the regular season and postseason there. I'm not saying that had anything to do with last year. But Dallas is a flawed team, and I think their bigger concern this year has more to do with the offensive line than it does with Dak Prescott. And where is their running game? Are they really going to rely on Ezekiel Elliott to be the bell cow guy in his ninth year?
He's atop the depth chart. That's the place he's at right now. We're talking with Russell Baxter, great NFL football person who you can follow on Twitter at BaxFootballGuru, at FanSided, a few other places that he contributes to as well. You mentioned tonight's game. We're getting the first look here this season with the Patriots minus Bill Belichick. How different is it going to be, or is it going to look somewhat similar?
Well, it could look somewhat similar. Gerard Mayo was obviously a part of the organization as a player, an assistant when he was there and so on. But I'll be curious to see them tonight. Obviously, I'd like to see if we're going to see extended playing time, maybe for Drake May. Jacoby Brissett is back with the organization. I saw what they did this year, and they're trying to recapture what the Houston Texans did last year. Houston brought in a former Texans player who was a very good player, and it was a defensive coordinator. Gerard Mayo has a very good reputation as an assistant coach. Houston used a second overall pick on a quarterback in C.J. Stroud. The Patriots used the third overall pick on a quarterback in Drake May. I think they're hoping to capture that type of feeling. And the one thing we saw last year with the Texans, and we've seen it again this year, an anxiousness by free agents to want to play for that organization. Now, I don't think we're seeing necessarily the same anxiousness on the part of the Patriots. The Patriots are taking care of business. Matthew Judon's been a very solid player for them, but he missed most of last season. He wanted to renegotiate his deal, and when it's all said and done, they're going to get a third-round pick for him, which is a pretty good investment. So, they're obviously in a rebuilding phase. They're coming off.
No Cardinals baseball tonight, so we've got the full show. They'll be back at tomorrow, and before we know it, it's going to be the NFL regular season, some preseason football going on tonight. And to preview the season and talk about everything that's going on right now, one of my favorite people to be able to talk football with, he is Russell Baxter. You follow him on Twitter at Bax, B-A-X, Football Guru. He does work all over the place, and we're so happy that he can join us for a few moments. Russell, appreciate you taking some time. How are you?
I'm doing good. Just watching the Atlanta Falcons get busy within the last 24 hours. And this is a team that a lot of people have high hopes on. With the signing of Kirk Cousins, they obviously drafted Michael Penix Jr. A little insurance policy just in case. Remember Kirk Cousins coming off the Achilles injury. But the bigger news is what they've done on defense in the last 24 hours, basically trading for Matthew Judon. The Falcons have had a pass rush seemingly forever. And today the news that they added Justin Simmons, the safety.
Yeah, so Simmons gets the one-year, $8 million deal. You mentioned Judon yesterday being acquired in a trade with the Patriots. It certainly does feel like the Falcons have improved themselves significantly, and that's not always easy to do once you get into training camp and you're just a few weeks out from the start of the regular season.
Yeah, no doubt. And what you're seeing, Matthew, over these last couple of days is some veterans landing jobs that may not have played last year, may not have played even 2 years ago. But as training camp goes on and the preseason goes on and people start to go down, they're bringing in fresher bodies. I mean, very quietly yesterday, the Buffalo Bills had Jordan Phillips last year, the defensive tackle. He signed with the Giants this offseason. And then yesterday, the Giants traded him to the Dallas Cowboys, who actually added Carl Lawson today, the pass rusher. So Dallas, who has been kind of strapped with these contracts, negotiations with C.D. Lamb and Dak Prescott, finally kind of waking up as far as adding some veteran talent.
Yeah, I think the Dallas situation may be the most compelling, interesting kind of off-season situation that is extended into training camp, with one guy sitting out of camp in CeeDee Lamb, another guy in Micah Parsons who's in camp but wants to get a new deal, a quarterback in Dak Prescott who is taking up so much money if he doesn't get a new deal for this season, and they're starting to run out of time. How much can they actually do to get those situations figured out in short order?
Well, you know, I find it hard to believe that those guys aren't going to play this year. And nobody, you know, it's very rare that someone extends a holdout anymore into the regular season. So I think these deals will get done and they might wind up being Band-Aid deals. You know, it's very interesting what's happened over the last year or so. You know, remember a couple of years ago, because of COVID, the salary cap went down. This past year, the salary cap went way up, I think over $30 million jump in one season. Then there was speculation, Matthew, this offseason, a couple of months ago, that the NFL could maybe reduce the salary cap again and take a hit because of this Sunday NFL ticket verdict. Well, that just got reversed 2 weeks ago. So maybe it's game on again, and maybe the cap goes way up. I know we have seen some extraordinary contracts for quarterbacks and wide receivers over the last couple of months and so on. And, you know, Jordan Love got his money. Tua Tagovailoa got his money. Dak Prescott always seems to get his money because Jerry Jones loves to spend money, and he's been accused of overspending in some regards. Remember, he had to, you know, part ways with Ezekiel Elliott, you know, who was, you know, kind of gave way to Tony Pollard, but was still a good guy inside the red zone. My goodness, guess who's back with the Cowboys? Ezekiel Elliott. So I think these deals will get done. You know, sometimes just timing. You know, but if you're CeeDee Lamb and you led the league in catches last year and you're all pro and you're watching some of these other guys like Justin Jefferson, not saying he doesn't deserve it, get enormous money, you want your share of the pie.
Do you think the Cowboys really believe in Dak Prescott, or do you think that there's at least a small voice somewhere in that organization that's saying maybe they can do a little bit better at quarterback?
I got a chance to meet Jerry Jones quite a few years ago, and so obviously he's in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I'll say this politely. There is no small voice in the Dallas Cowboys, okay? There's not a whimper. There's not a whisper. Everything Jerry does, we all get to see. I mean, how many times do you see after a game an owner address the press and not necessarily the head coach, or maybe both? So Jerry Jones is very front and center. Listen, I don't know if Dak has done anything to really change their minds about what they have. Okay, here's a little reality check when it comes to the organization. Matthew, they're 4-13 in their last 17 playoff games, going back to 96, the 96 divisional round. Okay, now, you know, I'm pretty good with birthdays. I don't think Dak Prescott was playing for the Cowboys back then. They haven't been to the Super Bowl since 1995. They haven't even been to the damn NFC Championship game since 1995. Now, and listen, let's be honest. What's the common link with the Dallas Cowboys going back to 1995? They've gone through quarterbacks. They've gone through coaches. They've gone through coordinators. It's the owner / general manager / valet / post office director. Jerry Jones is the common denominator, and the way he runs that team, obviously his son is involved as well now. So you got to take a closer look at that. Listen, just repeating in the NFC East would be a triumph for the Cowboys, and I say it for this reason. I don't know if you know this, but no one's repeated in the NFC East in basically 20 years. The last time there were back-to-back wins by a team in the NFC East, the Eagles did it 4 straight years from 2001 to 2004.
And right now, the Eagles would be considered the favorite in that division, with the Cowboys having the second best odds. I mean, that's a two division. There's nobody's expecting anything out of Washington or probably even the Giants this year.
Well, listen, we always see every year some fourth place team come out and rock our world. Last year, two fourth place teams made the playoffs. Cleveland rebounded, and Houston went. Think about this. Houston won 11 games in a 3-year span, Matthew. Last year, including the playoffs, they won 11 games all by themselves. So never say never. Listen, we saw Washington win a division title back in 2020 with a 7-9 record. So, again, this is a very, very odd division. And, again, a couple of years ago, four last-place teams made the playoffs the following year. You know, we've seen last-place teams. The year that Philadelphia beat New England in the Super Bowl, shameless segue that Patriots and Eagles are playing each other tonight, they were a last-place team in 2016 and then won the Super Bowl in 2017. So you can reverse trends very, very quickly. I think Dak just kind of gets a bad rap with the whole playoff thing. I'm not saying he's an all-timer or anything like that, but he's been pretty effective. But I'll tell you one thing. I saw Jordan Love carve up that Dallas defense last year with those young wide receivers, and Green Bay got hot at the right time. By the way, here's one for you. The Green Bay Packers have never lost a game in that stadium, in Jerry Jones Stadium. In fact, they won a Super Bowl in that stadium when they beat the Steelers in 2010. They are undefeated in the regular season and postseason there. I'm not saying that had anything to do with last year. But Dallas is a flawed team, and I think their bigger concern this year has more to do with the offensive line than it does with Dak Prescott. And where is their running game? Are they really going to rely on Ezekiel Elliott to be the bell cow guy in his ninth year?
He's atop the depth chart. That's the place he's at right now. We're talking with Russell Baxter, great NFL football person who you can follow on Twitter at BaxFootballGuru, at FanSided, a few other places that he contributes to as well. You mentioned tonight's game. We're getting the first look here this season with the Patriots minus Bill Belichick. How different is it going to be, or is it going to look somewhat similar?
Well, it could look somewhat similar. Gerard Mayo was obviously a part of the organization as a player, an assistant when he was there and so on. But I'll be curious to see them tonight. Obviously, I'd like to see if we're going to see extended playing time, maybe for Drake May. Jacoby Brissett is back with the organization. I saw what they did this year, and they're trying to recapture what the Houston Texans did last year. Houston brought in a former Texans player who was a very good player, and it was a defensive coordinator. Gerard Mayo has a very good reputation as an assistant coach. Houston used a second overall pick on a quarterback in C.J. Stroud. The Patriots used the third overall pick on a quarterback in Drake May. I think they're hoping to capture that type of feeling. And the one thing we saw last year with the Texans, and we've seen it again this year, an anxiousness by free agents to want to play for that organization. Now, I don't think we're seeing necessarily the same anxiousness on the part of the Patriots. The Patriots are taking care of business. Matthew Judon's been a very solid player for them, but he missed most of last season. He wanted to renegotiate his deal, and when it's all said and done, they're going to get a third-round pick for him, which is a pretty good investment. So, they're obviously in a rebuilding phase. They're coming off one of their worst season in 30 years. I'm more interested to see the Eagles in a different regard, because for all they added in the offseason, Saquon Barkley and, they have Bryce Huff and got rid of Hassan Reddick, who doesn't want to play for the Jets now and wants to be traded. There's two guys they miss, and I don't think I have to tell you their names, Jason Kelsey, and Fletcher Cox. The interior of the defensive line and the interior of the offensive line, one of them is probably a future Hall of Famer in Kelsey. So those are big parts. And remember, this Philly team, under Howie Roseman, general manager, I still think doesn't get enough credit. They've been able to maintain a pretty good roster with different coaches and different quarterbacks because they've always kept that offensive line up to snuff I'll be very curious this season how they handle life without Jason Kelce.
Final thing for Russell Baxter joining us here on a Graybar Sports Open Line. KMOX is St. Louis's home for Chiefs football. Chiefs obviously coming off another Super Bowl win last year. They were an offensively flawed team last year, especially during the regular season. Didn't matter. They won the Super Bowl. But we're already hearing things kind of this year. I mean, they lose Marquise Brown for a little while. Not clear when he's going to be able to return. Patrick Mahomes has been talking about how the offense misses him. Has that offense gotten any better than what it was last year? And does it even matter?
Well, I don't think it's matter because as we, it's really funny. It's really funny. I keep on hearing, Matthew, that this is an offensive league. And yet, if you don't have your offensive line in place and you can play defense, you can win a Super Bowl. Okay. Even in this day and age, defense stands for something. Okay. You know, it wasn't that long ago, 5 years ago, or now it'd be 6 years ago, that we saw the lowest scoring Super Bowl in history, 13-3, a total of 16 points. Okay? Now, in this day and age, what is more prevalent almost in the Super Bowl is the fact that you better get a pretty big lead in the Super Bowl. And even then, ask the Falcons how much, you know, how good that can be and so on. I'll get to one of my favorite Super Bowl stats in 1 second. The way they played defense last year, Steve Spagnuolo, big kudos. Remember, the Lions, let's look at the final four from last year, which was Baltimore, Kansas City, San Francisco, and the Lions. I think in terms of yards allowed, Baltimore, Kansas City, and San Francisco were 1, 2, 3 in the league, just off the top of my head. So there's something to be said for defense, okay? There's something to be said for hanging around a game. And then even though you are offensively flawed, being able to pull things out, you know, the Chiefs have made a habit of winning these Super Bowls, okay, overcoming deficits. And in fact, double-digit deficits. I'll leave you with this stat when it comes to the Super Bowl this year. So that way you don't shut it off in the third or fourth quarter. Matthew, in the first 48 Super Bowls, a team only overcame a 10-point deficit twice. That was Washington against Denver in Super Bowl 22, and that was the Saints against the Colts in Super Bowl 44. In the last 10 Super Bowls, it's happened 5 times.
It's interesting. That's good stuff right there. He is Russell Baxter. You follow him on Twitter at BaxFootballGuru. Get to his website there as well at Canva, and you can see all the links to all the stories he's always writing, recently doing a lot of stuff with FullPressCoverage.com. Russell, always appreciate your time. Hopefully we can tap into you a time or two during the course of the season.
That would be great. As I said to somebody today, we're 3 weeks away from the regular season, and in a blink of an eye, it'll be week 6.
Absolutely. Thank you, Russell.
Have a good night.
Time to wrap up this edition of a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. We got a full 2 hours of the show tonight because there was no Cardinals baseball. That also means you get the St. Louis City Soccer Report. That's going to be rolling your way in just a few minutes. A lot of things to get to, going back through what City did during the League's Cup. I'll tell you, I know they lost. I know they lost that game against Club America, but that was about as enjoyable of a soccer match that I have watched in a non... When you go to a game, obviously it's very different than when you watch it on TV. But as I was watching that game on TV the other night, that was fun, that was exciting, wide open play, lots of scoring, especially in the second half. That second half was incredible. That was so much fun. It was a bummer that City could not win. They had the 2-1 lead there for a little while. But that was a really, really enjoyable soccer experience, I thought, the way they played. And I don't think they played poorly. I know they lost, but I don't think they played poorly. And if that's who they're going to be once MLS play does continue, or resume, I should say, here at the end of the month, maybe they do go on a little bit of a run. And maybe all the stars align and they find a way to sneak into the playoffs. I'm not saying that is going to happen. I just thought it was a very good brand of soccer, what we saw even in that loss. They did make a small move today with Anthony Mrkonic going to Minnesota United for general allocation money. I'm sure they'll talk all about that during the St. Louis City Soccer Report, which is going to begin after the 8 o'clock news. As far as the Cardinals go, again, off today, back at tomorrow. This is a really important 6 days coming up, or 7 days, six games in 7 days coming up for this team. Got three against the Dodgers, a really good, really, really tough team, and you want to have some success against them. And then you got the Brewers coming to town for a three-game series after that. Look, at this point, it might be a little bit pie in the sky to talk about this team in terms of the division. They're 9 games back in the division. Not that it is impossible, but at this point, I mean, it would take just a massive letdown from the Brewers, a Brewers team that just split a 4-game series against the Dodgers. They won the last two after losing the first two. It would take a massive step back from the Brewers and a major, 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 almost unprecedented surge from the Cardinals. Those two things would have to happen. I don't think both those things are happening are likely. I don't know if either of those things happening is likely at this point in time. So when we're talking about things in terms of the wild card, the challenge about climbing up the wild card ladder is how many teams you have to contend against when it comes to that. You are not going to have an opportunity where when you're facing off against one team for a playoff spot, it's really simple. You win, they lose, you get a game. Well, when you're going up against a bunch of teams, when you're trying to jockey with the Braves and the Mets and the Giants and even the Reds at this point, not every single night are you going to win a game and gain ground on all of those teams. So that's what happens when you win. When you lose a game, you're going to lose ground to probably at least one or more of those teams. So it's a challenge. It is a challenge to win a playoff spot in a really muddled playoff picture. The Diamondbacks and Padres have separated themselves out here recently from the rest of the pack for that final wild card spot, and now they're just a bunch of teams trying to get that final wild card spot, and that's going to be the narrative. But that makes every game oh so important, because if you go lose a series, if you lose two out of three, one of those teams, two of those teams, three of those teams, and whatever series they're playing, they're going to have won two out of three, and you're going to be a game back of them from where you are at. So it is a challenge, a big challenge, in front of the Cardinals moving forward. All right, thanks to all my guests who are on the show today. This was a fun show. This really was. We will talk to you again tomorrow. Coverage of Cardinals baseball begins at 6:20. We'll do a very quick sports open line leading into that. St. Louis City Soccer Report, it's on the way next right here on KMOX.
Bye.
Time to wrap up this edition of a Gray Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. We got a full 2 hours of the show tonight because there was no Cardinals baseball. That also means you get the St. Louis City Soccer Report. That's going to be rolling your way in just a few minutes. A lot of things to get to going back through what City did during the League's Cup. I'll tell you, I know they lost. I know they lost that game against Club America, but that was about as enjoyable of a soccer match that I have watched in a non... When you go to a game, obviously it's very different than when you watch it on TV. But as I was watching that game on TV the other night, that was fun, that was exciting, wide open play, lots of scoring, especially in the second half. That second half was incredible. That was so much fun. It was a bummer that City could not win. They had the 2-1 lead there for a little while. But that was a really, really enjoyable soccer experience, I thought, the way they played. And I don't think they played poorly. I know they lost, but I don't think they played poorly. And if that's who they're going to be once MLS play does continue, or resume, I should say, here at the end of the month, maybe they do go on a little bit of a run. And maybe all the stars align and they find a way to sneak into the playoffs. I'm not saying that is going to happen. I just thought it was a very good brand of soccer, what we saw even in that loss. They did make a small move today with Anthony Mechanic going to Minnesota United for general allocation money. I'm sure they'll talk all about that during the St. Louis City Soccer Report, which is going to begin after the 8 o'clock news. As far as the Cardinals go, again, off today, back at tomorrow. This is a really important 6 days coming up, or 7 days, six games in 7 days coming up for this team. Got three against the Dodgers, a really good, really, really tough team, and you want to have some success against them. And then you got the Brewers coming to town for a three-game series after that. Look, I don't – at this point, it might be a little bit pie in the sky to talk about this team in terms of the division. They're nine games back. They're nine games back in the division. Not that it is impossible, but at this point, I mean, it would take just a massive letdown from the Brewers, a Brewers team that just split a four-game series against the Dodgers. They won the last two after losing the first two. It would take a massive step back from the Brewers and a major, 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 almost unprecedented surge from the Cardinals. Those two things would have to happen. I don't think both those things are happening are likely. I don't know if either of those things happening is likely at this point in time. So when we're talking about things in terms of the wild card, the challenge about climbing up the wild card ladder is how many teams you have to contend against when it comes to that. You are not going to have an opportunity where when you're facing off against one team for a playoff spot, it's really simple. You win, they lose, you get a game. Well, when you're going up against a bunch of teams, when you're trying to jockey with the Braves and the Mets and the Giants and even the Reds at this point, not every single night are you going to win a game and gain ground on all of those teams. So that's what happens when you win. When you lose a game, you're going to lose ground to probably at least one or more of those teams. So it's a challenge. It is a challenge to win a playoff spot in a really muddled playoff picture. The Diamondbacks and Padres have separated themselves out here recently from the rest of the pack for that final wildcard spot, and now they're just a bunch of teams trying to get that final wildcard spot, and that's going to be the narrative. But that makes every game oh so important, because if you go lose a series, if you go lose two out of three, one of those teams, two of those teams, three of those teams, and whatever series they're playing, they're going to have won two out of three, and you're going to be a game back of them from where you are at. So it is a challenge, a big challenge, in front of the Cardinals moving forward. All right, thanks to all my guests who are on the show today. This was a fun show. This really was. We will talk to you again tomorrow. Coverage of Cardinals baseball begins at 6:20. We'll do a very quick sports open line leading into that. St. Louis City Soccer Report, it's on the way next right here on KMOX.